Blog Talk Radio.
For radio as godless as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio.
We celebrate National Blasphemy Day, the March for Abortion Access, and promote COVID mandates.
We discuss religion and the death penalty. Then we speak with Cheryl Abram
about her leap of doubt and her book, Firing God.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. An urgent international response is needed to prevent the crisis in Myanmar from becoming a catastrophe in the heart of Southeast Asia and beyond, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has warned. In a report to the UN General Assembly on Wednesday, the UN chief also said he feared that the military's grip on power would become increasingly difficult to counter. Myanmar has been in political crisis since a military coup on the 1st of February. It is urgent to mount a unified international and regional response to help put Myanmar back on the path to democratic reform, Mr. Guterres said in the report, which called for the immediate release of President Win Myint, State Councillor Aung San Suu Kyi, and other government officials detained after the military takeover. It also called for immediate humanitarian access and assistance, especially to vulnerable communities, among them the Rohingya Muslims. The window to prevent the military from entrenching its rule could be narrowing, Mr. Guterres continued, before insisting that it was important to support the democratic aspirations of the people of Myanmar. The text was approved by 119 countries, with 36, including China, abstaining and one, Belarus, voting against. Vulnerable Haitian men, women and children on the move in the Americas should not be expelled from countries where they have found shelter, UN agencies said in a protection appeal on Thursday. In a joint appeal by UN Migration Agency, IOM, the refugee agency, UNHCR, Children's Fund, UNICEF and Human Rights Office, OHCHR, they highlighted that many Haitians in the past decade have faced a series of natural catastrophes, acute food insecurity and gang violence. The situation inside Haiti is bound to worsen because of last month's earthquake, making the island unfit for them to return, they added. The warning comes amid the reported expulsion of thousands of Haitians from a makeshift camp on the U.S. border with Mexico. Those who have left the Caribbean island include unaccompanied and separated children, victims of trafficking and survivors of gender-based violence. Some may need international refugee protection, while others may have different protection needs, the UN agencies said, before insisting that international law prohibits collective expulsions and requires that each case be examined individually. Only 15 African countries, nearly a third of the continent's 54 nations, have now fully vaccinated 10% of their people against COVID-19. That compares with almost 90% of high-income countries, the World Health Organization said on Thursday. Seychelles and Mauritius have fully vaccinated more than 60% of their populations, followed by Morocco at 48% and Tunisia, Comoros and Cape Verde at around 20%. Most of the African countries that met the 10% goal have relatively small populations and 40% are small island developing states. All of these countries were able to source coronavirus jabs while also receiving doses from the UN-partnered COVAX platform for equitable access to vaccines, WHO said. It noted that half of the 52 African countries that have received COVID-19 vaccines have fully vaccinated just 2% or less of their populations. Katie Dartford, UN News.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
I'm Living for Today, and I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. Hello, all you blasphemers, heretics, and infidels. Today is your day. September 30th, the National Day of Blasphemy, which coincides with the anniversary of the publication of satiric drawings of Muhammad in the Danish paper Jyllands-Posten, which set off a Muslim fervor. We encourage you to do something blasphemous today, and remember, blasphemy is a victimless crime.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. And if it isn't blasphemous to say that you're an atheist, that Yahweh or Allah or Shiva or Zeus or Quetzalcoatl do not exist, then I don't know what blasphemy is. Our engineer today is Grant Blaschka. That almost sounds like blasphemy, doesn't it? I'll have to ask Grant if he's a blasphemer. Grant Blaschka is producing this show today in the Stephen Yule Friendly Atheist Studio in Freethought Hall, the National Office of the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Madison, Wisconsin.
And Freethought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and we are a growing, thriving state church watchdog and the largest association of freethinkers, like-minded atheists, agnostics, skeptics, who know that religion should never be invoked in our civil laws and social policy. And we really need your help. If you're a member already, thank you. If you're not, please join us at ffrf.org.
In the second half of today's show, we're going to talk with Cheryl Abrams. She's the author of the book, Firing God. We met Cheryl at the Women of Color Beyond Belief conference in Chicago last weekend, where she told us her story of leaving religion.
Yes, and Freedom From Religion Foundation was proud to be a co-sponsor of that event. Before we speak with Cheryl, we're going to also speak with one of our FFRF attorneys, Ryan Jane, who's part of our strategic response team, about the friend of the court brief that the Freedom From Religion Foundation filed just this week with the Supreme Court against the death penalty. And speaking of the Supreme Court, there is breaking news, Dan, just as we speak, as we were getting ready for the radio show, we got word that the U.S. Supreme Court has accepted cert, has taken a case, a very bad case, where an appeals court had ruled that the city of Boston did not have to fly a Christian flag. And we had done an amicus in the past on that. It is a very dangerous, ominous sign that when there's a good decision by an appeals court, the Supreme Court has once again taken an appeal against it. We are really seeing the harm of the Trump appointments. We really need court reform.
Ideology on the courts. So, Sting turned 70 this Saturday. The singer, songwriter, author, and actor was born October the 2nd, 1951. On Sting's CD called If on a Winter's Night, he twice identified himself as an agnostic. At a commencement address at Berklee College of Music, Sting said, "If ever I'm asked if I'm religious, I always reply, yes, I'm a devout musician. Music puts me in touch with something beyond the intellect, something otherworldly, something sacred." Listen for some instrumental music from Sting's songs during the breaks today, including Every Breath You Take, Fields of Gold, Brand New Day, and Fragile.
This week on the Freedom From Religion Foundation's Ask an Atheist on Facebook Live, FFRF attorneys Rebecca Markert and Ryan Jane talk about the death penalty and about the amicus brief that FFRF just filed. We're going to be talking with Ryan, but here's a little history of the death penalty in the United States from Rebecca Markert.
The death penalty has been around probably since the beginning of the time, and it traveled from England to colonial America. We had capital punishment in the new colonies. The Puritans adopted their penal code largely from Mosaic law. In fact, 30 crimes that they included in that code were verbatim from the Torah. This included death for crimes like witchcraft, blasphemy, murder, adultery, and so forth. Now, during the Enlightenment era, there was a trend towards abolition. In fact, Thomas Jefferson wanted to abolish it for all crimes except for murder and treason, and he tried to get that passed in Virginia, but it was rejected. But since our founding, the trend toward abolition has continued. And up until 1972, that trend continued. And in fact, the Supreme Court did abolish the death penalty effectively in 1972 in a case called Sherman versus Virginia, where it declared it unconstitutional under the 8th and 14th Amendments. Unfortunately, the U.S. Supreme Court reversed course 4 years later in a case known as Gregg v. Georgia, where they decided that it would be constitutional to have capital punishment so long as you had certain sentencing guidelines in place, an appellate review, and a different process for capital cases.
And actually, that case, we'll talk with Ryan Jane on the second segment of our show about why we did that death penalty. There is a state church issue at foot there. You can watch that going to FFRS YouTube channel now, looking for the Ask an Atheist playlist, and plan to tune in every week, noon central on Wednesday, so you can participate, ask questions, and so on.
We also have a TV show.
And on our TV show coming up on Sunday, and it's actually released now every Thursday, Free Thought Matters interviews our favorite columnist from the nation, favorite columnist in general, the wonderful atheist and feminist Katha Pollitt.
And the Nation is the periodical. She's a columnist for the Nation. And during our interview with Katha, we talked primarily about women's rights, and especially about abortion, where she told us that abortion has not always been unpopular or illegal.
You know, an interesting thing that a lot of people don't know is that abortion was legal in most states until after the Civil War. And then it was legalized by Roe after a few states had already legalized it in 1973. So there was really a 100-year period in which abortion was illegal. When George Washington and Martha were living in the White House, except there wasn't a White House, abortion was legal. During the whole long colonial history of our country, abortion was legal. And so the idea that it's not in the Constitution, yeah, it wasn't in the Constitution because it wasn't controversial. It was just something women did, and the less you talk about it, the better, because, oh, it's women, you know. Really, for most of our history, abortion has been legal.
You can watch that entire Free Thought Matters interview with Katha Pollitt this Sunday on broadcast TV. Our show is broadcasting Sunday mornings in Chicago, in Denver, in Houston, Los Angeles, Madison, Wisconsin, Minneapolis, New York City, Phoenix, Portland, Oregon, Sacramento, Seattle, Washington, D.C., and San Francisco.
Yeah, they're at Sunday morning, except Madison is at 11 p.m. if you're local on WISC. And for other stations and times, check out FFRF.org under the news link. There's a drop-down. There's a whole section now on Free Thought Matters, and you can go to our YouTube and watch Katha right now if you're not in any of those cities. And speaking of abortion rights, I hope that I'll see you or in non-spirit at the March for Abortion Access. It is taking place Saturday, October 2nd in Washington, D.C. That's the big march, but there are 600-plus sister marches all around the country, including in our home base here in Madison, Wisconsin. And this march has been called by the Women's March conveners, but also Planned Parenthood and all the major abortion groups to protest what is going on in Texas with the abolition of constitutional abortion rights there and what is going on all around the country. And with the Supreme Court signaling its willingness to overturn Roe versus Wade, we need you out there. And please be there and protest. And other news related to that, we do cheer the House passage last Friday, historically, on September 24th, of the Women's Health Protection Act, which if it passed in the Senate and passed Congress as a whole, would overturn the Texas abortion law and other trap laws that are making unconstitutional restrictions on abortion. So we need to put pressure on the Senate to pass it.
And speaking of the Senate, yesterday we submitted testimony before the Senate asking them to reform the judiciary because there's so much ideology now in the courts. We have to do something about court reform.
Yeah, and that was about the Texas case and shadow docket issues with the Supreme Court. And on local issues, and we are a national group, but we are headquartered in Madison, Wisconsin, we have once again pleaded with our local officials to adopt what is the equivalent of a green pass, COVID pass, in Madison and Dane County, Wisconsin, so that you have to be fully vaccinated to go to restaurants and so on. We also have once again contacted the Madison School District to thank them for now requiring teachers to be vaccinated. We had written them in August, and they did so, but pointing out there should not be a religious exemption. It is unnecessary, unconstitutional, and unwise. Also asking Madison Metropolitan Schools to join Los Angeles and some of the forward-thinking school districts in requiring eligible students to also be vaccinated. We need to follow the science.
If Italy can do it, we certainly can do it in this country.
Yes, and Dan and I, we turned from Italy, and we had to show our CDC card everywhere to get in places, and it was a great incentive for people to be vaccinated.
So we are also busy. Our attorneys are sending letters around the country complaining about violations of state-church separation, including in Covina, California. The police department there has a chaplaincy program, and they're allowing ministers to serve as chaplains. They're volunteers, and they come along and they pray with people and they push religion on people, and that's unconstitutional. A secular government, a secular police department should not have a religious chaplain. We've asked them to stop that practice. Over in West Virginia schools, there's a preacher that they're allowing to come into the Hardy County schools just to come on campus to minister and preach to the students. And we have written a letter to the district asking them to stop this proselytizing teacher from coming in to interfere with and basically to harass or to be a predator against students within the schools. That's in West Virginia.
And then, you know, we're often having to write, we are a nonpartisan group, but usually we're having to write Republican governors who won't do anything about COVID in vaccinations. And we had an interesting situation this week, having to write the new New York governor, Kathy Hochul. I'm not sure how to pronounce her name.
H-O-C-H-U-L.
Hochul. I'm going to say Hochul. And Kathy Hochul got the right idea about COVID. She was cheerleading it and the mandates and so on in New York. But she spoke at a Christian cultural center on Sunday, and it was basically she mixed up her bully pulpit with a church pulpit. She invoked Jesus. She asked people to be apostles for the vaccination, basically in Jesus' name. She talked about God. She credited the vaccine with prayer, including her prayer to God. And she even credited the smarts of the researchers and scientists who developed the vaccine. It was God who actually made those people smart. And it was over the top, Dan. We were so disappointed to see this, and we are equal opportunity, so we wrote her. We also pointed out that she said to young people, God let you survive this pandemic because he wants you to do great things someday. He let you live through this when so many other people did not. Very insensitive religious ideology that seems to say it was okay that 1 in 500 Americans died. God wanted them to die. So we asked her to stand up as much for the secularism and separation of state and church in the future as she is properly standing up for COVID vaccination.
So we're going to take a break here. After the break, we're going to talk with FFRF attorney Ryan Jane about the friend of the court brief that we just filed before the Supreme Court in a case dealing with the death penalty. And then after that, we're going to talk with Cheryl Abram, author of the book Firing God. Now, if that isn't blasphemous, this will be a one-way
weekend. Yeah, that's a very appropriate interview
we
this week.
We can celebrate blasphemy today. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
I'm Steve Pinker. In my book, Enlightenment Now, I show that the world has become a better place as reason has been overcoming superstition and tribalism. But the values of the Enlightenment are under attack. That's why I'm a proud member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest association of free thinkers working to keep state and church separate. Please join me in supporting the Freedom From Religion Foundation to ensure that our government is driven not by religion, but by reason.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
And once again, happy Blasphemy Day. This is Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we have on the phone with us Ryan Jane, who is one of our attorneys, and he is an important part of our strategic response team. And Ryan, you were part of the team that wrote an amicus brief that was submitted to the Supreme Court this week on a death penalty case, and I'm wondering if you can first explain what that case is about.
Sure, absolutely, and thanks for having me on the show. So this is a case called Ramirez, and the background of the case is that this is an inmate, death row inmate in Texas, who is requesting to have a spiritual advisor in the execution chamber with him. And the state is okay with that, but he specifically, Ramirez, is asking that the spiritual advisor be allowed to lay hands on him, so physically touch him, and to have audible prayers. And the state is saying, no, that's going too far. He can be in the chamber, but he can't be physically touching you, and he has to stay silent. He can say silent prayers, and that's it. And so people, I think, probably hearing that might wonder, why is FFRF weighing in on this case? We don't usually, you know, have the death penalty as one of our main issues, and it doesn't seem like there are direct state church issues going on exactly here. So with a little bit of background, there's a number of things. One is that a very strong portion of our members, we know, support abolishing the death penalty. So for one thing, we're giving voice to what a lot of our members are thinking about this, which is that at any opportunity we should come in to say, hey, it's wrong that the state is killing this person. And the other issue is that we're looking at a couple issues. One is that these are religious inmates who are getting special accommodation, and that should be raising people's flag a little bit, that what if this person wasn't religious? Are they going to get treated equally? So we wanted to weigh in on that. And then finally, we wanted to just take a look at this sort of absurdity going on, that the court is really tuned into the religious liberty rights, to these really minuscule details, and then they're executing someone, which it's hard to imagine a clearer way to violate someone's religious liberty than killing them. So we, in the brief, we highlighted those 2 points. I can go into some more details, but that's basically what's going on with the case.
Yeah, and also, Ryan, of course, the brief also points out that although it's not the only route in the Western world, the Bible is a prominent route, prominent reason for why we still have a death penalty, the biblical injunctions to kill, 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 all the capital punishment that is supposedly in God's name.
Yeah, and you always hear the same few arguments made in defense of the death penalty. There's a couple that are just factually debunked arguments, things like it's a deterrent or it saves money. Both of those are demonstrably false. And then the only other argument that people ever really make is to say, well, this is punishment for what they've done. And it's usually the way that they back that up is saying it's an eye for an eye. You know, and that comes from Deuteronomy and also the same chapter in Exodus that says that slaves are worth 30 shekels, and if you knock out your slave's eye because you beat them too hard, you have to set them free. So this is a chapter regulating what you can do with your slaves that says an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, and that's what people point to when they justify the death penalty. And yeah, in the rest of the Western world, this is seen as an embarrassment. It's so archaic and barbaric. It puts us in categories with countries like North Korea and Iraq, Pakistan, where this sort of thing is common. And it's just, it's very embarrassing that we still have this in the United States, frankly.
Yeah, and it will either ties us with tyrants or it ties us with theocratic tyrants, basically.
Exactly. Yep.
So Ryan, what are we asking the court to do?
So the thing we're primarily asking the court to do is to take a fresh look at the constitutionality of the death penalty itself. And I think it's worth pointing out that there are a lot of groups weighing in on this case. We were not the only amicus. There was a number of religious groups and also some other groups and law professors and prison officials all weighing in Ramirez's favor, except for us. We were actually just on neither side because we don't have a problem with this guy having, you know, his spiritual advisor there. We're not coming in to say this guy has to die alone. To the contrary, we're saying you shouldn't be killing him at all. And we're actually the only amicus that said that. Everyone else seems to have just taken it as a foregone conclusion that this execution is going to happen. And so we wanted to first and foremost say, court, you should take a really serious look at whether this entire practice is constitutional or not. The Supreme Court ruled that the death penalty was unconstitutional in 1972, and then they reversed course 4 years later. But so we initially just say, take a look at that, because the court got it right in 1972. This is cruel and unusual punishment. So that's the easy road, is just look at the Eighth Amendment. But then the other argument, the, I think, novel argument that we made was first articulated by our co-counsel, Patrick Elliott, so he deserves a lot of credit here. And this is what I was describing a little bit before, where what's been happening lately is a string of cases where the Supreme Court is trying to nail down exactly what details can happen regarding a spiritual advisor being in the execution chamber. First, they were asking about affiliation. You know, if you have a Muslim or a Buddhist inmate and the state is only offering a Christian clergyman, are they entitled to someone who matches their own religious affiliation? And at first the court was saying no, and then they kind of changed mind and said yeah. And then the question was, can the spiritual advisor be in the execution chamber, or do they, you know, is it okay if they're on the other side of the glass? And they said, no, you're entitled to have them be inside. And now the question is, well, can they be touching you, or is a no-touching rule okay? So it's like this increasingly granulated look at where the free exercise rights are. And the Supreme Court has, over the last few years, in this context and others, has just been expansive in how much it wants to protect religious liberty under the free exercise clause and laws like RFRA, and in this case, a law called RLUIPA, which is a similar thing in the prison context. And so what we were pointing out is this is becoming really absurd that they are claiming to care so, so much about religious liberty, where any minor encroachment needs to have rigorous justification. The state had better have a great reason for why it needs to do this thing and have this rule if it's going to encroach on someone's religious liberty at all. And yet, while they're squabbling about these little details, they're going to execute the person the moment after and just obliterate all the
right, huh. Right, and probably for a religious reason, we have that death penalty. Well, we're out of time. Ryan, Jane, you co-wrote that with FFRF Legal Director Rebecca Market as well. We were grateful. You did it like in one weekend, last weekend. Thank you so much. And coming up, we're going to be talking with...
Coming up, we're going to be talking with Cheryl Abram, author of Firing God. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
I'm Julia Sweeney, and I'm an atheist and former Catholic. I even wrote a play about it called Letting Go of God. Right now, Catholic bishops are using their considerable influence to deny women contraceptive rights. Please join the Freedom from Religion Foundation and help keep church and state separate. You can call 1-800-335-4021, that's 1-800-335-4021, or visit ffrf.org to stand up for true religious freedom.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and Dan and I and FFRF's legal director Rebecca Markert and our reproductive rights intern Barbara Alvarez all spent a fascinating weekend, last weekend, in Chicago at the second Women of Color Beyond Belief conference. And FFRF is proud to be a financial co-sponsor. And it was a fascinating weekend.
with a number of speakers and authors. And the very first, I guess that was a breakout, the very first panel during the conference was called The Authors Circle, which included the authors Candace Gorham and Sikivu Hutchinson, both of whom we've interviewed on this show before a number of times. And it included two Puerto Rican writers and activists, Yolanda Arroyo Pizarro and Zuma Oliveras Vega from Puerto Rico. They gave a talk.
And the authors panel also included Cheryl Abrams, who's worked as a social worker, a learning and development specialist, and she is the author of a book with a great blasphemous title, Firing God. And we have Cheryl on the phone with us today from Northern Virginia. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So, Firing God, that's a great title. Were you raised religious? Did you ever hire God in the first place?
I did not hire him, but he was just there when I showed up at work. So, you know, very, very religious. Southern Louisiana, my entire, not just my family, but like the entire community, you know, everywhere you went, there was something about God and Jesus. And, you know, so I was just thrown into it.
Protestant?
Well, we changed it. We were non-denominational, but it was very, very legalistic. So it was more, I don't know, what do you call the legalistic one? You can't wear pants and makeup. And
Orthodox.
Or oh. Fundamentalist.
Fundamentalist.
Yeah.
Very, very, very fundamentalist, yes.
So when you were a little girl, you couldn't wear pants?
No pants, no. And when I, you know, grew old, but I didn't care. I mean, you know, when I was little, that it didn't really matter to me. But, you know, I really noticed it when I became a teenager. No pants, makeup, fake hair, you know, like nothing. The TV shows I watched, couldn't watch certain TV shows, read certain books.
A very controlling religion then.
Oh, very, very much so.
So did you remain devout and obedient, or did you start to have doubts, you said, when you were in high school?
You know, I enjoyed church. I enjoyed going. I enjoyed, let me say, the feeling of family. You know, I enjoyed feeling like I was a part of something. You know, so I didn't have a whole lot of complaints because I didn't want to go to hell, for one. You know, or at least I couldn't voice those complaints, you know, but I didn't have an issue with it until I got like when I joined the military. That's really when I started to not necessarily question, but just struggle and suffer more.
Where did you serve?
So I was in the Army. I was a supply specialist. So I was in Fort Lewis, Washington. And I was in a Patriot battery. So after Desert Storm, you know, the Patriot missiles,
yeah.
I was in a company that did those. So we had to go to Saudi Arabia and stuff like that. But, yeah, so that's what I did.
So Cheryl, when you started to suffer from it. So when did you break away from religion?
Well, I didn't break away from it until right before I wrote my book.
Really?
What was that,
2014 was the one.
My book was published. Yeah, yeah. So like a year and a half before that is when I wouldn't even say broke away. It was more like it fell away.
Fell away. Well, you during your talk at the Women of Color Beyond Beauty conference in that panel about the author circle, you said, "I have been wrong about everything." That's quite a statement. Do you remember?
Yes.
So could you elaborate?
Absolutely. So when I recognized that I was wrong about God and religion and, you know, who I was, and it was like dominoes, you know. It went beyond religion. You know, it's like all of these ideas that you have about who you are and what you can do and what you're capable of and what's in your way. And I'm, you know, like all of that just came tumbling down. And it gave me permission to not just question the existence of God, but to question the rules I was looking at to live my life day to day.
You wrote about your transformation, and you said, I'm no longer afraid now. I'm no longer anxious or expectant. I like how you said, it's still about me, but the me is not the me that I thought I was. So you must have thought you were, what, an obedient servant of Christ to grow up to be some submissive wife or something? Is that what you thought originally?
So originally I thought I was nothing. You know, like we sang songs about how unworthy we are and how, you know, terrible and just, you know, like you shouldn't even be here, but it's just by the grace of God, you know, because he had mercy. Like that's why you're even breathing right now, you know. That's what I thought I was, you know. And I had to think that. When I really look back on it, I had to think and I had to believe I was all of those things, you know, unworthy and lost and sinful. I had to, otherwise the story wouldn't make sense. There would be no reason for Jesus and God, you know, if I wasn't all those things first.
Yeah, if you weren't a lowly sinner and wretch and all that, then you wouldn't need salvation.
No.
And then we can praise Jesus for healing a sickness that he created, I think. You know, he puts us down so that he can say, I'm going to raise you up. Well,
there you go. Exactly.
Well, so that must have been a huge moment in your life with this sort of...
It was...
Go ahead.
Yeah. It was very huge because I had... My life was built on those fundamental beliefs. You know, I made major life decisions, major, based on those beliefs. You know, I stayed in relationships based on those beliefs. That was the rule book. You know, I never had accountability or responsibility because I was not allowed to decide. I had to go to the book that had already decided for me and then move from there, you know. So it was an enormous shift. It really, and it was scary as hell. I was terrified, absolutely, because up until that point, I had not lived. You know, I didn't know what to do. I literally said, what am I going to do now?
Well, I know that feeling because I came out of religion too, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
So in a minute we have to take a break, but when you did come out, I guess that's the right phrase, when you did come out as a non-believer, did you experience any pushback or any criticism from relatives and friends?
Oh, sure.
So what happened? What do your parents now think of you?
So did I say this on a panel? I'm not sure, but I didn't tell my mom until the day before my book came out.
Wow.
I was so scared to tell her. Because what had happened was, it wasn't just me who had built my life on me being terrible and you know, dark and unworthy and all that. Everybody I love and who loved me had built, you know, a persona of Cheryl based on that, you know? So in my, you know, I was the good Christian girl following the rules and doing what I was supposed to do to get to heaven and witnessing to people, you know, that was Cheryl. So by me doing this, writing this book, putting my face on the cover with that title, that impacted all of these pictures, you know? And so people were like, well, I thought, you know, now I don't know who you are.
Did you have any support? Did you know anybody who was an atheist or rejected religion?
You know what? I was super shocked when I discovered Mandisa and what she was doing.
With Black nonbelievers.
Yes. Mm. I was like, oh, my goodness. I had heard of atheists before, but they were like a myth or something, or some, you know, something that's not real or something, like, because I'm like, how in the world could you not believe in God? That's ridiculous.
Huh.
You know, but now I'm like, oh my goodness. So I developed a support system, yes.
When we come back, we are talking with Cheryl Abram, who wrote the book Firing God. When we come back, we're going to talk to you a little bit more, Cheryl, about the repercussions of leaving religion, and also why you took that leap of what you called doubt. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. We'll be back in just a minute with more Free Thought Radio.
I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no religious body seeks to impose its will, directly or indirectly, upon the general populace.
Let's restore respect for America's secular roots. Help the Freedom From Religion Foundation defend the wall of separation between state and church. Join us at ffrf.org. Freedom depends on freethinkers. Speaking freely, thinking freely. This is Free Thought Radio.
This is Free Thought Radio. Happy Blasphemy Day again. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we are talking on the phone from Northern Virginia with Cheryl Abram, author of the book Firing God, published by New Harbinger Press, and of course also available on Amazon. And the book promotion says that Cheryl Abram was at the end of her rope. Her life was falling apart on every level, and she had, quote, succeeded in making herself unworthy, incomplete, and separate. Then one day, this practicing Christian took a leap of doubt and fired God, or at least the God she had created.
I
so
like
welcome
that
back, Cheryl, and tell us a little bit more about that whole process.
Yeah. So I did what I was supposed to do. Okay. I felt like I was unworthy. I acted as if I was unworthy. I made decisions and interacted with people, you know, as if, you know, I was not worthy. Okay. And, so I 100% succeeded at that, you know, but there came a point to where it hurt. You know, and we all have our threshold of pain, and I guess I was at mine, you know, and I when that happened, I started to see things that weren't quite right. You know, I was unworthy and all that stuff, but also I was chosen and, you know, loved by God and, you know, the most powerful being in the universe. And here I was, you know, barely able to make it with my children and, you know, in a terrible marriage. I mean, with a man I hated with all my heart. And, you know, it wasn't making sense. Okay. So the thing that got me to where, and it wasn't just doubt, it was exhaustion. It's not like I didn't want to be a Christian anymore. I couldn't. It's like when you lift weights a lot and you get to muscle failure, and you just, no matter how much you want it, you can't lift the weight again because you're physically unable to do so. That's the way it was with me. I was psychologically, emotionally, physically, I couldn't, you know, pretend anymore, okay, that I was this thing that I'd been pretending to be. But at that moment in the book, you know, that's when I actually talked out loud. I was in my bedroom and I said, you know what, God, I don't love you. I don't know you. And I said, had some other choice words there. And I said, you're fired, you know. And that is the thing that really, it was in that moment that I saw, because it was like a weight lifted off of me. I didn't even know I was carrying, you know. And that's the moment when I saw, okay, I was wrong about everything. I was wrong about everything, right? Huh. And to take that leap, you know, that leap of doubt, required more than somebody just telling me God doesn't exist or me reading books or looking at videos or whatever. You know, I was so entrenched, you know, and sometimes I wonder now, how did I ever get out of that? Because I was so brainwashed, you know, that there, and it had to be something. It had to just be me being too tired to pretend I was this creature, you know, that I had been pretending to be. so that I could have a savior who would make me human again.
So you saved yourself.
Huh. Yes.
And I take it you left that marriage and had some career changes?
Oh, God, happily. I had a divorce party and everything. Yes.
So now you're working in cyber security. I mean, you seem happy and all of that. It seems like you've survived that horrible experience. You're working in cybersecurity. Do you think you could hack into some of these mega churches and find out some, or is it, you don't do that kind of thing, do you?
No, I'm on the security side of cyber. Yes.
Oh, okay.
I don't do the hacking and stuff.
Yes. Well, he's joking.
Yes, I know.
Well, you said you worked in had a governmental job in, was it human resources?
HR. Mm-hmm.
So the big question, so you don't believe in God anymore, you're agnostic or atheist, how can you be a good and moral person?
So I don't even deal with this right or wrong stuff. I mean, I deal with it, you know, but it's not, for me, that's not the issue, you know. For me, the issue is because I still believe different things, you know, but the question is not, is it a right belief or a wrong one? And I think I said this at the conference. The question for me is this belief useful for me? Is it useful for me to believe this about me, about, you know, this person, about this, like, you know, whatever? You know, is it useful for me to believe the earth is flat? You know, for some people it is. Okay. For me it's not, you know. So I'm not with the, you know, the right and wrong and good and evil, and you know, I'm not like I was before. No. So, but what that has done, that moment in my bedroom when I did that, I told the truth. That was a truth that I had never told I knew it. I'd always known it, but I never spoke it because I was scared, because I wasn't supposed to be feeling like that and thinking those things. So I denied it. I ignored it. You know, I don't do that anymore with anything. Okay. That moment has taught me that I have a right to tell my truth. Okay. In any situation. And that's absolutely 100% what I do.
So
my career or my personal life.
And Cheryl, you're a mother of four. I think you said you have two still at home. How has this changed how you're, I hate to say the word, bringing up, raising your children? How does this, your interactions and what you're telling them?
You know, my two oldest are like, Mom, like, you're just going to let that slide? Like, you're not going to do anything? Or that's what, you're just going to talk to them? Or what? Like, you guys are lucky. You did not have the mom I had, right? Because the before mother with my oldest kids, you know, it wasn't just about raising my kids. It was about being a good Christian, following the rules, getting to heaven. The kids were a tool for me to get to heaven. Okay, they were just another tool. You know what I mean? So it's not like that anymore. Now I'm actually discovering who my children are, and they're their own. You know, it's so different. It's very, very different.
They don't have to be like a carbon copy of you. They can be their own people.
Right. Exactly. And I can be my own person, you know, not feeling like what they do reflects on me. So I got to make sure they do this so I don't look, you know, all that stuff is out of the window, out of the window.
So at this conference we were at, it was an amazing conference organized mainly by Mandisa Thomas and some other.
And Sikivu Hutchinson.
Sikivu Hutchinson and Crutchfield. She couldn't be there. Women of Color Beyond Belief. A lot of issues were raised, especially about being a minority within a minority. So
yeah.
Have you experienced any, you know, the black community reacting against you because you're like betraying their culture?
So other than my family, which was not bad, I mean, compared to some other people, of course, my family reacted. You know, they were sad and maybe upset. I don't know. But and things aren't like they used to be. But nobody like kicked me out. You know, we still talk and laugh and, you know, stuff like that. But it does feel a little different. You know, like imagine you're a Patriots fan and you show up with some 49ers thing on at the game or whatever.
Oh,
you know,
no.
It's kind of, yeah, it's kind of weird. But, you know, but that's the extent of that. Now, as far as other people, now what I do, I mean, I haven't really gotten any of that from others. And I don't know if that's because of where I am or where I work or whatever. You know, I mean, people aren't really allowed to talk about religion and stuff like that in government. So
yeah. Well, and then you've also said you discovered Black nonbelievers with Mandisa Thomas.
Yes. 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 And so, I'm so happy for that because I know exactly how they feel. I mean, we have grown people in the room who are afraid, who feel like they're in the closet. You use the exact, you know, the right words because that's what it feels like. In the closet. You're scared to come out because of who's going to shun you, who you know is going to shun you, you know, when you do. Because what happens is, and the reason why they do that is because if you leave religion, if you leave what I know is 100% true, that means it's not true. You know, so that would be like me having, you know, a belief about gravity or something and then coming up one day saying, you know what, I don't believe in gravity, it's terrible. That's not going to bother me because I see, you know, whether you believe it or not.
Right, it's true.
You know? But with the God story, every time somebody does not believe, that makes it more precarious. You know, we're not going to admit that. But that's why we're upset. That's why we're mad, because you're not supposed to do that. It's strength in numbers. Okay, that's what it is.
Well, thank you, Cheryl Abram, author of the book Firing God, which you can find online and through New Harbinger Press as well. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us today.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Thanks for having me. Mm-hmm.
And listeners to the show, thank you for listening. WOOMLP in Philadelphia, to WIDE and WMUU in Madison, Wisconsin, to WADR in Janesville, Wisconsin, to KEOS in Bryan, Texas, to KOPN in Columbia, Missouri, KEPW in Eugene, Oregon, KZSM in San Marcos, Texas, and I like this one, WOOL, Black Sheep Radio, Wool, in Bellows Falls, Vermont, in Ithaca, New York, WRFI, and we know most of you are listening to the podcast, but please give us a thumbs up on your podcast provider, and then tell your family and your friends to listen to Free Thought Radio. You can find us at ffrf.org/radio.
And if you heard the beginning of our show, you know the legal fraught trouble our nation is in with the takeover of our courts by Trump appointees. We're facing great danger on abortion and on separation of church and state, as well as voting rights and so many other things. Please join us at FFRF and tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday